2002, and you know, I'm something of a podcaster myself.
Who am I? You sure you want to know? If somebody told you I was just your average, ordinary guy, not a care in the world, somebody lied. Truth is, it wasn't always like this. There was a time when life was a lot less complicated. Can I take your picture for the school paper?
Sure. In this lab, we have 15 genetically enhanced super spiders.
There's 14. One's missing.
Peter, are you all right?
I'm fine.
Pete, look, you're changing. I know I went through exactly the same thing at your age.
No, not exactly.
Wow.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Movie Punditry. Thanks for coming to this episode of Random Rewatch. I am Mike, and this time we are doing 2002's Sam Raimi film Spider-Man. One of the original great comic book movies. We're going to talk about that in a little bit, where it fits in the lineage. So Spider-Man. So this is a crazy story. Production of a Spider-Man movie started way back in like 1975. And I'm going to tell you, I could do an entire episode, probably a multi-part episode, on the development of a Spider-Man movie throughout the years from 1975 until 2002 when this got made. Obviously, I'm not going to do that, but I want to. I'll give you a quick rundown. So, Spider-Man obviously belonged to Marvel until 1999 when they sold the rights outright to Sony. They used the money that they got, the $7 million that they got, to create Marvel Studios. So that's how that kind of came to be. But since the mid-70s, they've been trying to get a film off the ground. I mean, there were actually a couple of movies in the late 70s. They were animated movies, but they were features. There was Spider-Man, Spider-Man Strikes Back, Spider-Man Dragon's Challenge. Early 80s, it kind of kicked around. Roger Corman had an option on it for a few years, which expired, I think, in 1985. Marvel optioned the film to Canon, which was Golden Globus, who did a lot of action movies in the 80s. And they had until April of 1990 to make a movie. They brought in Tobe Hooper as a director. He had done the Texas Chainsaw Massacre and participated in the direction of Poltergeist. Apparently, Golden Globus didn't really get who Spider-Man was. They hired a screenwriter, Leslie Stevens, to write a script treatment, but Stanley hated it. The script had Peter Parker transforming into a literal spider. Obviously, that's not the point. Stanley kind of got that thrown out. They hired some other screenwriters. They crafted an origin story with Doc Ock as a teacher and a mentor to Peter Parker. And that story had him going after the fifth force or anti-gravity or some kind of superpower. Somewhere along here, Tobe Hooper was gone. Joe Zito, who had done Missing in Action, Red Scorpion, some other action movies around that time for Canon, he was brought in. They were looking at Tom Cruise to play Peter Parker, Bob Hoskins to play Doc Ock, and Stan Lee to play J. Jonah Jameson. And then Superman IV, The Quest for Peace, happened. Canon lost a ton of money on that movie, so they started slashing budgets, and Zito decided he'd had enough and he was out. By the end of the 80s, Canon was bankrupt and got bought out by an Italian company. Menahem Golan left to run 21st Century Studios and took Spider-Man with him as part of his deal. Kicked around there for a while. At some point, it wound up at Kuroko. This was a studio that did the first few Rambo's films, did Total Recall, Terminator 2, Basic Instinct. And at some point, James Cameron had written a script for this. And Cameron supposedly wanted Arnold Schwarzenegger to play Doc Ock. Anyway, it gets tossed around for a few years. Tom Cruise is obviously out. Leonardo DiCaprio, maybe he's in the early 90s, with Arlie Emery as J. Jonah Jameson. Electro's in. Sandman's in. It just keeps getting changed around. There's financial troubles in the studios in the mid-90s. Carolco goes bankrupt. 21st goes bankrupt. Marvel goes bankrupt. MGM comes in and buys most of 21st Century's assets. So they wind up with Spider-Man. Meanwhile, Marvel is saying that their original contract with Canon had expired, so the rights had reverted back to them. And so they license them off to Columbia Pictures, which is owned by Sony. MGM is mad because MGM says they own it. And there's a deal that happens that involves James Bond and Spider-Man. MGM had the license to most of the James Bond books, but not all of them. Columbia had produced a couple of James Bond movies, including Casino Royale, which was a spoof. And there's a very long story regarding the rights to Thunderball and who owned it. And was it Eon Studios who owned the rest of the Bond franchise? And so that's why you get Never Say Never Again. And so MGM and Columbia work out a deal where Columbia gets Spider-Man exclusively with no encumbrances, and Columbia agrees to stop making Bond movies and hands those rights exclusively over to MGM. And so this is how we wind up with Spider-Man at Columbia. So Columbia goes through a whole host of potential directors for this: Roland Emmerich, Tony Scott, Chris Columbus, Barry Sonnenfeld, Tim Burton, Michael Bay, Ang Lee, M. Night Shyamalan, David Fincher. I mean, a James Cameron Spider-Man is one thing. A Michael Bay Spider-Man is a completely different thing. A lot of spinning camera moves and close-ups of Mary Jane's butt, probably. Anyway, Amy Pascal brings in Sam Raimi. David Keep comes in to write the screenplay. He starts with Cameron's script as the kind of basis for the origin story at some point. Doc Ock is out and Norman Osborn is in. They looked at a bunch of people to play Peter Parker: Leonardo DiCaprio, Freddie Prinze Jr., Chris O'Donnell, Jude Law, Ewan McGregor, Heath Ledger, Wes Bentley, and even Joe Manganiello auditioned for it. James Franco apparently also auditioned for it. But Sam Raimi had seen Tobey Maguire in Cider House Rules and thought that he was perfect for the character that he envisioned. And Tobey Maguire comes in and auditions and screen tests, and he is hired to play Peter Parker. He is, I think, 25 at the time. As far as Mary Jane goes, there's a bunch of people that were looked at for that. Elizabeth Banks campaigned for it, but Sam Raimi thought she was too old for the part. But he did eventually cast her as Betty Brant. Kate Bosworth, Elijah Dushku, Jamie King, a couple other people. Raimi really wanted Alicia Witt. I don't know why, but he was reportedly pretty obsessed with the idea of hiring her. Alicia Witt, of course, comes to fame in David Lynch's 1984 Dune, which we did a couple of episodes ago. She was also known for Twin Peaks and the TV sitcom Sybil. She'd done a bunch of movies in the late 90s. And for some reason, Sam Raimi really wanted her to play the part. But for whatever reason, she didn't. Kirsten Dunst auditioned for the role. Apparently, and I didn't know this, they only dyed the front of her hair, and she wore a wig. I would imagine they would have dyed her whole head, but for some reason, they just dyed her bangs. J.K. Simmons was cast as J. Jonah Jameson. in place of Stan Lee, who everybody thought was getting a little too old for the role. Funny story, he apparently found out that he had been cast on the news because the story broke before he got the call from his agent. That's the way things work in the early days of the internet, I guess. Now he would have found out on Twitter or something. So another odd thing is Hugh Jackman was cast in this movie to do a cameo as Wolverine, which would have blown people's minds. They actually brought him to New York. He was ready to shoot the scene. And then they discovered that for whatever reason, they couldn't get their hands on the X-Men costume. And so they decided to scrap the whole thing, which is crazy. Young audiences today have no idea who Cliff Robertson is, but he was a very popular actor in the 60s and 50s. And so he's cast as Uncle Ben. And then a couple other people we'll talk about. Oh, James Franco, who had gone out for Peter, winds up getting cast as Harry Osborn. And as far as Norman Osborn goes, apparently they had looked at like Nicolas Cage, John Malkovich, Billy Bob Thornton. John Malkovich would have been amazing. Not that Willem Dafoe is not amazing, but John Malkovich would have taken this thing to a whole nother level. Anyway, so that's enough of that. Let's just kind of dive into the film. I really think that this may be the first really great comic book movie. You know, up until Blade, there was really not a lot going on. I mean, okay, let me rephrase that. This is probably the first great modern comic book movie. We had Superman in 1978. We did an episode on that. You should listen to that episode if you haven't, because it's really great, if I do say so myself. And that's a really great movie. We had Batman in 1989. It's, you know, obviously other Batman movies and stuff. But in terms of like the modern formula for a superhero movie that would move forward, you had this evolution from Blade at the end of the 90s, and hopefully we get to do Blade at one point. Hopefully that year comes up, because Blade is a really kind of under-discussed movie in how similar it is for the whole modern comic book genre. But we had Blade, we had X-Men, and then we have this. And these three movies, I think, really kind of set the tone for this idea of a modern, grounded in reality, comic book adaptation film with real, genuine characters who really go through things and are well-written and multi-layered and multifaceted. And we take this and move it forward into X2, and then, you know, eventually into the MCU, Man of Steel, the Nolan Batman movies, you know, all this stuff. Really, I think that seed starts here. I think before these three films, comic book movies were a very different thing. They were just kind of, they are what they are, and everybody's kind of very one-dimensional in them. And these three films, and especially this film, I think really makes a difference and makes comic book movies into actual movies and into actual stories. You know, this film really kind of set the template for especially origin story movies. Now, not every comic book movie is an origin story movie. You know, after the third reboot of the Spider-Man franchise, you know, you wind up with Spider-Man Homecoming with Tom Holland, which he's already Spider-Man in the movie. But Blade was already the Daywalker, and the X-Men already had their powers. You know, yeah, it was the origin of the team, but it wasn't like this is me discovering how my powers work. I mean, you had a little bit of that with Rogue, but not really. You know, this is really starting with a guy who has no powers and ending up with a guy who's a superhero and taking it through. And it really kind of creates how that whole template works. So it's a lot darker than I remember. And, you know, obviously a lot of that is due to, you know, Sam Raimi and his thoughts and his visions. This is, and I just realized this is the second Sam Raimi film in a row that we've done. Maybe I should have put them all in 1 month. We'd have a Sam Raimi month. But this movie's got a lot going on under the surface. And there's some difficult things that happen to some of these characters. And I think part of why it works so well is because these actors are a little older. I mean, you know, like I said, Tobey Maguire was 25. James Franco, I think, was 22. Kirsten Dunst was probably the youngest of the three of them. She was, I think she was 18 when they were filming this. And this is pretty typical for the day. I mean, a lot of actors played younger. Look at Beverly Hills 90210, where you had, you know, 27-year-old high school students. Actually, you had a 30-some-odd-year-old high school student at show. But there's some stuff in here that, like, I didn't remember. I mean, I haven't seen this film in a long time, obviously, but I didn't remember being so harsh and being like, Peter is kind of a jerk, especially to his uncle. One, there's the kind of the opening, you know, first act kind of scene where, you know, he promises uncle he's going to come help him paint, and then he blows him off, and then he gets mad at his uncle for it. And then there's the scene where his uncle's dropping him off so he can go, you know, do the wrestling thing. And he really gets on his uncle's case for absolutely no reason. And Uncle Ben is like the nicest guy on the planet. And, you know, obviously Ben and May took Peter in after his parents died and, you know, raised this child. And they love him and they treat him well. And he's just a total jerk off to his uncle for really no reason. And then you've got Harry. I mean, Harry just like goes right out and basically steals the girl that Peter likes right out from under him. Like, he legitimately, like, Peter tells him something about spiders and basically tells Peter that he's a nerd. Like, why would I want to know that? And then he goes up to MJ and he uses the exact same line on her to impress her. And then gives the over the shoulder look to Peter, like, oops.
Change colors to blend into their environment. It's a defense mechanism.
Peter, what makes you think I would want to know that?
Who wouldn't?
Over 5 painstaking years, Columbia's genetic research facility.
Gonna talk to her now? The
genetic come on.
You talk to her.
Armed with these DNA blueprints. Right. We have now begun what was once thought impossible.
Disgusting. Just
imagine. Yeah, hateful little things.
I love them.
Yeah, me too. You know, spiders can change their color to blend into their environment.
Really?
Yeah, it's a defense mechanism.
And then Norman, you know, Norman's in his company and he's dealing with the military and he's basically willing to break all of the rules, whatever rules there are, jump ahead into human trials for this untested serum that he has in order to, you know, keep his contract, keep his money going on. Like, none of these three people are nice, are good people. They're all kind of jerks. Like, the only good lead in it is really MJ. I mean, obviously May and Ben, but, you know, MJ is kind of like the shining star in this thing. And these other three, like, are basically terrible people. I will say that Kirsten Dunst is really, she nails this role so good. You know, she's a delight to watch on the screen. She's fun. She's kind of flirty. She's kind of, you know, even though she's going through stuff in her own life with her, you know, jerk of a father, stepfather, or whoever that guy is, who's yelling at her all the time. Oh, yeah, that's the other thing. Like, Peter's, like, basically creeping on her through her bedroom window because they live right next door to each other, and his bedroom window lines up with hers, and he's, like, watching her get ready for school in the morning. Creepy. But anyway, Kirsten Dunst, she's really great in this. I might even say that she is maybe out of all the actors, actresses who've played against Spider-Man, she may be my favorite, now that I think about it. And that's not to say anything against Bryce Dallas Howard or Emma Stone or Zendaya. I mean, they're all fantastic actors. I mean, Emma Stone just won her second Oscar. So I think the learning to be Spider-Man sequences are really great. Shooting the web out of his wrist, like, organically thing is a little weird. And apparently it was Sam Raimi's idea. He thought that people wouldn't buy him creating web shooters. I don't think that opinion has aged particularly well. I mean, in the comics, he had web shooters, the mechanical web shooters. That was always a Spider-Man thing. And, you know, the other two film series, he's got mechanical web shooters. Not really a problem. But, you know, this is what Sam Raimi decided, that this was going to be a bodily fluid. And he's squirting his stuff all over the city. But the sequences are great where, you know, he's learning how to swing and he's learning how to run. And I got to tell you, those effects were kind of really groundbreaking at the time. You know, we're kind of desensitized to it because we've had a bunch of great Spider-Man movies, and seeing Peter swinging through New York City is kind of old hat to us now. But this was really a new thing. And we hadn't seen anything like this. And it was really, really well done. It does not look cheesy. It holds up really well. So kudos to the effects team for doing all that. I mean, it leads to some questions. I mean, there's a scene in the cafeteria where he, you know, basically shoots a web across the cafeteria, grabs a tray, and then flings the tray back and hits Flash in the head. Like, and then walks out of the cafeteria with the tray dragging behind him on the end of his web, and nobody noticed that. Like, nobody's figuring out this guy's Spider-Man. As much as the fight with Flash, and by the way, that's Joe Manganiello, who, yes, him of Deal or No Deal Island. He had auditioned for Peter, but they gave him the role of Flash, and I think he's pretty good in Flash. The fight in the hallway is funny, but it also is showing what Peter can do.
I think you're pretty funny, don't you, freak?
Flash, it was just an accident.
My fist breaking your teeth, that's the accident.
Come on, Flash, stop.
I don't want to fight you, Flash.
I wouldn't want to fight me neither.
Kick his ass, man.
You know, the other side of that is, though, you have this, you know, kind of mild-mannered kid who's got, like, nerdy and wears his glasses and takes pictures for the school newspaper, which, by the way, I did all those things. But all of a sudden, he's like, he's taking on the biggest kid in the school. He's like flipping around in the hallway and, you know, taking him out. And nobody's kind of figuring out, hey, you know, this kid, and he's taking all the pictures of Spider-Man and he's got webs shooting out of his wrist. Like, nobody's putting that together. MJ's not putting that together. Spider-Man shows up 15 seconds after she gets mugged. You know, her and Peter get mugged and she's not figuring any of this out. Anyway. The food tray sequence where she slips on the floor of the cafeteria and he catches her and then catches all the food in the tray, that was not an effect. Tobey Maguire did that. Apparently it took like 150 takes. And her reaction is genuine to the fact that he had actually done it. So then we get on to the whole wrestling sequence. You know, Uncle Ben drops Peter off in Sam Raimi's Oldsmobile, makes another appearance, and then we see Bruce Campbell.
What's your name, kid?
The Human Spider.
The Human Spider, that's it? That's the best you got?
Yeah.
Oh, that sucks.
The sum of $3,000 will be paid to the terrifying, the deadly, the amazing Spider-Man!
My name's the Human Spider.
I don't care. Get out there.
No, he got my name wrong.
Get out there,
him.
You moron.
Who gives us Bruce Campbell, who gives us the name Spider-Man, gives us the amazing Spider-Man. For some reason, Octavia Spencer, Academy and BAFTA and Golden Globe winning actress Octavia Spencer, is the ticket taker at the wrestling match. Okay? And then he gets in the ring with the great Macho Man Randy Savage.
Some kind of mistake. I didn't sign up for a cage match. Hey, unlock the thing. Take the chain off.
Hey, Freak Show, you're going nowhere. I got you for 3 minutes. 3 minutes of playtime.
And after the wrestling match, we, of course, have the sequence where he lets the so in the comics, this character is called the Burglar. In this film, he's credited as the Carjacker, but he lets the guy get away, and then eventually the guy is involved in the death of Ben. Peter thinks he kills his uncle. We find out he didn't, that it was Flint Marko who had done it, who was this guy's partner. But anyway, he just basically lets the guy die and stands there and watches as he falls out the window. He's Spider-Man. He could have saved him. He doesn't. You know, this is kind of Peter at his low. It's a necessary step for this character to get to this point in order to redeem him and have him truly become Spider-Man, which is something that earlier comic book movies maybe would not have done. And of course, no discussion in this movie would be really complete without talking about Norman Osborn and Willem Dafoe's great, great performance. As great as Nicolas Cage would have been, Willem Dafoe was given a masterclass in this. The sequences where he's having a conversation with the Goblin, or the Goblin's having a conversation with Norman, and he's playing both sides of it, it's very, you know, kind of Smeagol Gollum kind of vibe going on. But he's just doing it. He's talking to an empty chair. He's hearing the voices in his head. And they're really acting as two separate personalities. And he's just amazing in doing this. I mean, Willem Dafoe can really elevate any project that he's in. But he really takes this character to a real deep level. And, you know, for kind of a mass market comic book movie where there's going to be kids by the millions watching this thing, to have this kind of a character in it is really an interesting choice, and probably nobody but Sam Raimi would have gone down this road or pulled this off at this point. You know, nowadays it's a little more common to see something like this, but in 2002 you didn't really see this kind of thing.
Where are you?
Follow the cold shiver running down your spine. I'm right here.
I don't understand.
Did you think it was coincidence? So many good things all happening for you. All for you, Norman.
What do you want?
To say what you won't. To do what you can't. To remove those in your
way. And obviously it's kind of a minor role, but can we talk about J.K. Simmons and J. Jonah Jameson? I mean, this guy may be my favorite character in the whole movie. He's just got one-liner after one-liner after one-liner.
Spider-Man and the Green Goblin. The Green Goblin, you like that?
Mr. Jameson.
Made it up myself. These weirdos all gotta have a name now.
Mr. Jameson, Spider-Man.
Hoffman?
Yeah?
Call the patent office, copyright the name Green Goblin. I want a quarter every time somebody says it.
How about green meaning?
Spider-Man wasn't attacking the city. He was trying to save it. That's slander.
It is not. I resent that. Slander is spoken. In print, it's libel.
You don't trust anybody. That's your problem.
I trust my barber. What are you, his lawyer? Get out of here. Let him sue me. Get rich like a normal person.
I mean, I really want to hear his J. Jonah Jameson selling some State Farm insurance. And so, you know, that brings us to the end of the movie, which is that tremendous fight. I mean, it felt so real and so visceral. I'm talking about the one in, like, the abandoned house. You know, I'm not sure there's a lot of those laying around Manhattan. But the fight itself, it just felt so real and so visceral. And these guys really just kind of slugging it out with each other. You know, you really feel for it. And you really, like, there's this real moment where, you know, especially the first time you see this movie, where you're not sure how Peter's going to pull this thing off. I mean, you're kind of in the back of your head, you're probably going, well, it's a Spider-Man movie, so obviously he's going to win the fight. But there's a point in the fight where you're kind of like, I don't see how he's going to do it. Then obviously he does, and he defeats the Green Goblin, who's such a great character. And, you know, I've said this before, but I'm glad they brought him back in No Way Home, because Green Goblin is really one of the, I mean, he's really one of the great, I think, comic book movie villains. I mean, he's a pretty evil guy, but he's not doing it out of just greed or, you know, one of those things. It's like he was damaged by his own doing, but he was damaged by, you know, this chemical, this serum, and it messed him up. But he's so good, so convincing, and that end fight is so great. And then, you know, to know that Harry blames Spider-Man and not be able to tell him, coming out of this movie, is just really a great beat for that. I remember watching this movie and being like, wow, this is pretty savage that they're putting these two guys against each other. I mean, obviously that's the way it's supposed to go, but how they got to it is just was, I thought, was really great. So this movie was originally planned to come out in November of 2001. It got pushed back in 2020. They pushed it back because production was running long and they were worried about post-production. And so they pushed it back to the spring of 2022. And it worked out well for this movie because obviously with 9/11 happening in September of 2001, November 2001 would have been a pretty difficult slot for this film to come out, especially being a New York-based story. In fact, I can remember, like, there were posters and key art for this film with webs on the World Trade Center, and they had to kind of quickly remarket this film and get rid of that stuff. So this film came out in the spring. It premiered in April, and it was released in wide release on May 3rd. And this film was a monster. It was setting all kinds of records from day one. Literally, it was the first film to make $100 million in the first weekend. It set a new record of $114 million for its opening weekend. It had the highest per theater average of any film in history at that point. It had the highest opening day of all time. It made like $39 million on its first day. It was a juggernaut. Eventually, it would go on to do $407 million domestically. Worldwide box office, $825 million on a $139 million budget. This thing was absolutely huge and kicked off a huge, huge franchise. Sony has made $10 billion, actually over $10 billion, on Spider-Man movies. This thing is a monster for them. So it's got a 90% on Rotten Tomatoes, even after all these years. 73 on Metacritic, A- on CineScore. Roger Ebert did not like it. 2.5 stars. What's up, Rog? He didn't like the effects. It felt like there was no weight to them, like literal weight to them, little like gravity to them. And so the film wasn't universally loved. There were criticisms of it. People didn't like Green Goblin's costume. I mean, the costume was kind of, all right. So the suit was kind of weird. I love the mask. People were saying, oh, you couldn't see his expressions. Willem Dafoe doesn't need expressions. He can act with his voice and with his body. And he did just fine. The kiss in the rain, people love that. It's iconic. It's really, I mean, if, you know, they still made those, like, that's entertainment films like they used to back in the 70s, that would be a clip in every single one of them, because that is one of the most iconic movie moments of the 2000s, I think. No Oscars. It was nominated for two, sound and visual effects, but hey, Lord of the Rings, you gotta deal with it. Did win a People's Choice Award, though. You know, so obviously two sequels to this particular film series, and then another two movie series, and then another three movie series, and then two animated films. You know, this whole Spider-Man franchise and is just, it's huge. It's a juggernaut. And then, you know, with obviously with the latest live action film, bringing all of them in together. And I thought it was such a good use of these characters and these actors. And yeah, there were rumors before that film came out that this is what was going to happen. But when you actually see that moment when Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire walk onto the screen through Ned's portals, man, I remember being in the theater and I remember people going crazy, you know, because they love this movie and they love this version of Peter Parker. You know, I was talking to Rondell today and he's like, I want to see a buddy movie where, you know, Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire's characters just kind of go out. And I'm like, I am down for that. That would be a great thing. The Spider Guys. Make it happen, Sony. So that is it. That is Spider-Man 2002. Go watch it. It's on Disney Plus, and it is just, if you haven't seen it in a while, go watch it. It's such a great movie. So let me dig out the number generator here, and our next film will be from 1993. That's gonna be a tough year to pick something out, I think. So a lot of interesting films in there. A lot of Wesley Snipes going on. A lot of John Grisham going on. I think Schwarzenegger had a couple movies. Stallone had a couple of movies. Yeah. All right. So thanks for listening, and we will be back next time with something from 1993. And see you next time.